Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Connor Newt here with you on this Tuesday morning. Blake Topmeyer from USA Today will join us later this hour, coming up at 8:30. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana, the water coaster capital of the world, just a short road trip away. Get tickets at holidayworld.com. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana, hometown of 1J Cutler. Rexo's got a question for Tennessee and Vanderbilt fans that we're going to get into here in just a few minutes. Joe, I do want to get to a couple NFL headlines involving some edge rushers in the AFC North. Trey Hendrickson, who, as we know, is in a contract dispute with the Cincinnati Bengals, is not expected to show up to mandatory minicamp. So looks like that situation will continue, and it doesn't look like Hendrickson will show up to mandatory minicamp. Elsewhere in the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers have landed Aaron Rodgers. He's got his press conference later today. Well, apparently T.J. Watt not going to be there. T.J. Watt also not expected to attend Steelers minicamp. So a couple of AFC North pass rushers in some disagreements with their team about their future and what contracts could look like. And Watt, not expected to attend Steelers minicamp. Diana Rossini putting that out there. And then Hendrickson, not at Cincinnati's minicamp.
Is team leader Aaron Rodgers going to reach out to T.J. Watt? Is he going to, you know, speak on behalf of the organization?
And could
say,
be.
Hey, you know, we need accountability in this place.
He probably will get up on the stage today and say, you know, it's a real shame that we've got some of our players just not here, not putting in the work. Yeah. In the offseason.
Guess you know who you can trust around here. The Hendrickson thing, yeah, just continues. He's not backing down.
No.
They're not backing down. You know, in one of these situations, you know, you do the math and it's like, yeah, we can take some fines for a while, you know. We'll end up getting the deal or close to the deal that we want. We can take some fines for a little while. But
I don't think he's going to
take them
that.
Forever.
I'm with Charles. I don't think Trey Hendrickson is getting the deal he's looking for in Cincinnati. Like I think Cincinnati is kind of drawing the line in the sand, and you know we've talked about this. He's on the other side of 30. It's not great timing for him, just in terms of when he's becoming a free agent here with this contract. And I get it. If you're him, you're looking at Myles Garrett getting paid $40 million a year, and you're thinking to yourself, well, I mean, I am the leading sacker in the NFL over the last couple of years. Now, I would not put Trey Hendrickson in the same category as Myles Garrett.
No.
Nor do I think most people would.
No.
But if you're him, like, I think you could easily argue and justify. I mean, you could pay me $32, $33, $34 million a year. Like, that, he could go get that somewhere else. I just don't – it doesn't sound like Cincinnati has any interest in that whatsoever.
And the timing, you're right in terms of his age, but the timing is also – how many more years of Joe Burrow you want to waste? Because
right.
He just had an absurd season statistically, and your defense was so bad even with this guy. Take this guy off that defense. How bad is it? That's the argument, right? Like the timing is, are you in a window right now or not?
Yeah.
Because you fired your guy who we all thought was a genius 2 years ago, defensive coordinator. I think that probably speaks to his personnel. And Trey is one of your very few – even good players on that side of the ball. So, but the Bengals, when they draw a line in the sand on not paying someone, the Bengals, that's their thing.
It is their thing. So we'll see what happens with Trey Hendrickson J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt. But apparently neither one of those guys showing up to minicamp in the AFC North. So we'll see how those situations continue to evolve. Joe, we've talked a lot about the house settlement and the $20.5 million that the schools now have directly to pay to the players. And you've got an interesting question related to Tennessee and Vanderbilt fans that you'd like to throw out there. What is your question for Vols and Doors fans today?
Well, on the topic of baseball, real quick, by the way, Murray State is an awesome story getting in the College World Series. So Duke and Carolina thought it was going to be like Duke, Carolina, and MoMA. They both blow it at home in Supers. And so so the SEC still ends up with the most teams, which is crazy, the two. Nobody else has more than one. I will say real quick, basketball, baseball aren't the same thing, but this is – we are still in the era of, oh, my gosh, parity is going to go away, NIL, et cetera, et cetera. you can't look at Omaha this year and say that parity has been blown away in that sport, right?
Yep.
So for those of you who think that we're never going to have another Cinderella in basketball again, I think let's just see it play out. But my question is, if you're a Tennessee fan and a Vanderbilt fan and or a Vanderbilt fan, I guess a Tennessee or a Vanderbilt fan, are there some ands?
Actually, I think there are.
There are some.
Yeah, I've met some people who root for both.
Yeah,
which is a fascinating.
I know people. I mean, I grew up rooting for Michigan and Michigan State, so I mean that's and I wasn't the only person in the world. I know that's crazy, but the question is, if we assume, and I think we would rightfully assume, that these football programs are going to get what they need. They're going to get what they need. They have to. They drive the revenue when it comes down to it. If you assume that, the program is going to suffer. So, you know, right now with Vanderbilt, you've got, really promising. You got possible National Player of the Year with your women's basketball program. You also lost a really good player to Notre Dame, but you have some real promise there to be special, I think, with Shea Ralph moving forward. You had a really good first year for Mark Bynum in men's basketball. You know what Tim Corbin, and that's your thing.
Yeah.
However, I could still make the case that some Vanderbilt fans miserably miss Memorial Magic and have had a taste of it here. They got wins over Tennessee the last 2 years in that building. So if you have to make a choice, and we'll say the same thing for Tennessee fans, Vitello's got your program going. It's hard to imagine he's going to lose out. But, I mean, if Rick Barnes needs somebody, are you going to say no to Rick? So there's going to be tough choices. Football is going to win. Football is going to win in the SEC.
Yeah.
At every single place. So what program, if somebody else has to win, what program are you picking? Because, like, they're not all going to get everything they want out of this $20.5 million.
It's a good question. Like, if you're – because I think a lot of Tennessee fans, a lot of Vanderbilt fans would say – and maybe Vanderbilt is a little bit different than Tennessee, just based on kind of the history of the program. But I think a lot of people in general would say, yeah, make sure football's taken care of. And as long as football's taken care of, we'll worry about everything else later. That's kind of where I fall on the Tennessee front. But when you assume that that's taken care of, like trying to make the choice between basketball and baseball, I think for both schools, is really interesting. I mean, honestly, for me, this is just my personal preference. I'd probably rather see the baseball team win. That's just me. I think a lot of people disagree with that. I think you're right. I think the majority of people would pick basketball in this situation.
I mean, maybe, but
on the Tennessee front, at least. Now Vanderbilt, I don't know. That one's interesting.
I mean, Vanderbilt baseball is, you know, it's the one nationally powerful. Like, you are among the best, and you have been for
long time,
almost 20 years now, with Tim Corbin, among the best in that sport. How are you going to, how are you going to forfeit that? Like, especially right now with Tennessee and what they're doing, you want to, like, you want to back off from that? It's hard for me to buy. But, yes, Memorial Magic is a real thing, too, and it's been badly missed, and it's sad, you know, what's happened with both those programs. And look, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan right now, I'm telling you right now, like, the prospect of losing Michaela Blakes to another, because you're talking about if you do enough around her in the next couple of years, you could compete for a national championship. Vanderbilt women's basketball has been to the Final Four one time, I believe. Yes, one Final Four. They had a great program for a long time. You know, Jim Foster, obviously. They have a great history, but you could have a chance to actually, like, win a championship in that sport, which is the most, you know, fast rising sport in this country is women's basketball. So, I mean, you're going to lose Michaela Blakes, for example. I mean, I'm not saying that's the situation, but I'm saying there's an example of, to me, it's like this money has to, like, you cannot lose a potential National Player of the Year, right?
It's really
but also baseball is baseball.
And as we know, you know, people have already started, like, NIL is going to factor into it to some degree too. But the allocation of the $20.5 million, like, Jared on the YouTube chat says, Vandy needs to spend 20 of the $20.5 million on the baseball team. Says, we're never going to win a national championship in football. Put the money into your best product. That's what Jared says.
Outspend the Royals immediately.
It's like, we need almost all of the money dedicated to baseball.
See, he also says, and I didn't even entertain this. I think this is crazy. But he says, we're never going to win a natty in football. Pump the money into your best product. But again, Jared, like, but football still also drives the revenue.
Right.
And by the way, let's not forget that we've talked about different conferences coming together, this and that, and some of the weaklings getting pushed out. I would not mess around with not doing everything you can to be competitive in football. You don't want an 8-4 football team. You don't want a team that can win on a given Saturday against SEC competition. You're right. I don't see a natty anytime soon. But you don't want winning football that goes to bowl games and gives you a game like the win over Alabama last year? You don't think that's worth pumping money into?
Yeah, I would. I mean, football, as you said, I mean, and that's really the most important part of it. It drives the money, right? So you have to you have to reallocate some of that money into football when it's driving that level of money.
Like, yes, you're going to still get your SEC checks for now
if
you abandon football, but that's not the way to go.
A very interesting question that Rex Road has thrown out there. Tennessee fans, Vanderbilt fans. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how these teams and programs and schools allocate this money moving forward. What would you rather see them spend it on? Football is a given in this conversation. So would you rather see baseball, men's and women's basketball? Where would you like to see the money go for Tennessee and Vanderbilt? We'll get your thoughts on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Blake Topmeyer from USA Today will be with us here at 8:30. We'll get into the college football, college sports discussion with him. Rex Road's thrown the question out there for Tennessee and Vanderbilt fans. We know that the money that has just been kind of negotiated here in the House settlement, a lot of it's going to get invested in football. We know that in the SEC. What about baseball? What about basketball? Where would you like to see the majority of the rest of that money go? If you're a Tennessee fan, if you're a baseball fan. Joe, how would you answer this question if you're a Tennessee fan? Let's start with the Vols. Where would you like to see it go? Rick Barnes, who has been very consistent, and they're always in the mix, and they have not yet broken down the door to get to the Final Four, but they've been one of the best programs in the SEC over the last 5, 6, 7 years. And then you've got Tony Vitello, obviously, who just won a national championship last year. They've been in the Super Regionals 5 years in a row. If you're a Tennessee fan, how do you answer this question?
I guess when you say how would I answer it, if I were a Tennessee fan, I'd go with my biases, which is toward basketball, as much as I love baseball and college baseball. So,
frankly, that's what this question really comes down to, I think, is like, what do you personally
what do you
prefer?
What do you value? I mean, look. Again, just like with Vanderbilt and I talk about Michaela Blake's, there's also – I mean, women's basketball is not – it's not nothing. Like, there's – and you know, I mean, Tennessee made kind of a risky hire, which early on looks pretty good. You've got one of the two proudest programs in the sport of women's basketball. Do you not want to finally get back to Final Fours and being that level of relevance? Easy for me to say.
Yep.
I'd go that way. And, you know, the Vanderbilt, because, look, I mean, it's been a great run. Obviously, Tennessee just built out the stadium. And, I'm not saying, like, the choice isn't, and then the other program gets
you
nothing.
You fold the baseball program,
You know, I think you also ask the question with these programs a little bit of, like Nick Saban. You know, Nick Saban says, I mean, why do guys come to our program? Because they go to the NFL. We sent guys to the NFL, so we develop players. So, I mean, look, there's certainly some truth to that, right? So, to me, if I'm Tim Corbin and now Tony Vitello too, you can certainly sell, we have the best prospects and we are going to get you prepared for a professional career, you know, if you don't go right out of high school. Like, when you do go, you're going to be ready. Look at our success rate. I think both of those baseball programs can sell that certainly more than these basketball. Not that there are, you know, there's been some success stories out of basketball too, but it's not like, and I know Rick Barnes is definitely a big player developer guy. Grant Williams is a great example of not a big recruit who turns into an NBA guy. But I think the baseball programs can sell that, and maybe you can get away with being a little bit not getting into every single bidding war with LSU and Arkansas, you know, and whoever else, and maybe still get teams that are good enough to win it all.
The interesting part here is going to be, is there going to be more NIL money that you can allocate to the baseball team or to the basketball team,
right?
Because you're spending more of your own money on football.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's going to be really – or is it just – is the football pot just going to grow where it's, yeah, we're spending all this money from NIL on the football players, plus on top of that, now you've got all this other money that we're spending on football too. Is it just going to be football where we just see exponential growth on how much these players are getting paid?
I think yes on the last thing, but I also still think, you know, certain boosters may have their own preferences too. And, and yeah, this is – we're talking $20.5 million. That doesn't mean that that's the only money, right? There's going to be outside NIL money, and then the CSC will look at the NIL and see how it goes, and then we can all LOL about the whole thing.
Nice.
Clayton Hunt, thank you, says on the YouTube chat, which is all we have today, by the way, folks, says, how much has Tennessee and Vanderbilt spent across the board? Anywhere close to Texas, $35 to $40 million budget. So the Texas thing, remember last year, Ohio State, much was made about, was it $20 or $25
million? $20.
$20 million roster for Ohio State, which, by the way, most of that money was retaining guys. Most of that money was not new guys they brought in. It was retaining guys. But they did bring in Will Howard, and somehow that worked, and they won it all.
Judkins, yep.
Yeah, Judkins is a huge pickup for sure. So the Texas thing is now that number, 35-40, is a consideration of what you're getting out of the revenue share, out of the 20.5, and then also what you're getting extra. So, again, it's just the money's just going up. So,
and by the way, Sarkisian, head coach of Texas, has vehemently denied the $35 to $40 million number.
Yeah.
But that's for his roster, just football.
Exactly. And that's the problem too, right? I mean, some of these numbers, I mean, it's like BYU is out here claiming, like, they had this huge, like, media blitz to try to claim that they're not just outbidding people, while everyone in all of college sports says, yeah, BYU is paying more than anybody, and that's why they have, like, the number one recruit coming in hoops and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm talking BYU basketball.
Yeah.
Like, that program is spending like crazy, and then they're like, no, we're just – people just want to come to BYU and be developed. Okay. So, to answer your question, Clayton, yeah, like, I think Tennessee – whatever Texas is doing, Tennessee has got to be right in that neighborhood. Now, Vanderbilt – Not as much, but Vanderbilt's, I mean, they're competitive. They have been able to get money for NIL, and they've been able to win some big battles in the portal and in high school recruiting because of it. But, yeah, I think Tennessee, if it is $35 to $40 million, whatever it is going to be in that neighborhood. Has to be.
Well, and then that gets back into what we talked about in the first hour of, all right, well, that's your $20.5 million that you're getting out of the settlement that helps with that. But then there's still a lot of booster NIL involvement that has to be taken into place after that. And how sustainable is it? That's, I think, a big question for college football, college sports moving forward, is how sustainable is the NIL part of it? Like, what's that going to look like in 10 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's just, then you get into, you know, it's like the haves and have nots. That's always a concern. You know, is the gap getting widened? But again, do the haves become just like, again, Texas Tech is apparently spending more money than anybody
apparently
on football, because they just have, they got one guy in particular who's like, yep, it's just, but remember, Oklahoma State at one point did the same thing when they still had T. Boone Pickens around, didn't do much for him, but my God, they built Taj Mahal in Stillwater, Oklahoma because of it.
Hey, Stillwater's fine town.
I
haven't either. Heard it's a fine town.
Matt says, for UT, I would go football, basketball, then a tie between baseball and women's basketball. There are too many women basketball banners for them to not get their share. Yeah, again, they're all gonna
get stuff.
They're all gonna be competitive.
Yeah.
But if you come down to, man, that $2 million,
right?
Is it coming over here? Is it going over? Like in Auburn? Like I said, Ed brought up yesterday too. North Carolina is fascinating. One of the blue blood in basketball,
yep.
And you got Belichick in here, like, Yeah, well, this is an NFL program, so right. I need to pay NFL salaries. I mean, that's fascinating. Maybe Jordan Hudson will break the tie.
Jordan Hudson hand delivering the money to the football player. Here you go. Got money for you here.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that's the difference there. I don't know. Interesting stuff on that front. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Blake Topmeyer from USA Today will join us coming up next. We'll get into the college football discussion with him and get his reaction to the House settlement and how that could affect things moving forward. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Connor Newt here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking a little college football, college sports. And to help us do that, we head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Blake Topmeyer from the USA Today Network. Blake, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Doing well, you guys?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate Super. You taking time to be with us. So, Blake, we've known the House settlement has been coming for a while now, and now it is here. So what do you make of the settlement, the creation of the College Sports Commission, and the task in front of that commission to now try to go out there and enforce these NIL deals?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a difficult task. We heard from the conference commissioners yesterday, and Greg Sankey from the SEC said that his membership has said uniformly that they want regulations, they want oversight, they don't like the wild, wild west. Well, that's all well and good until it's your team, your program in the crosshairs facing the discipline. So we'll see, right? I mean, the first time this College Sports Commission tries to investigate anybody for an NIL deal that's not on the up and up, what do you think the school, the program is going to do? Do you think they're going to lay down and say, yep, we did it, we screwed up, hand us down the penalty? No, they're going to fight back, which is what college sports has done for years now, right? That's my belief anyway. But the commissioners say, no, this is what the coaches want. This is what the ADs want, the presidents want. They want to be policed. Right. I think the task is going to be very tough. I think the task by this Deloitte group that is evaluating NIL deals to determine whether they serve, quote, a legitimate business purpose and whether they're of fair market value, I think that's going to be an incredibly difficult task by this NIL clearinghouse as well. And wouldn't surprise me if we see some more lawsuits the first time this Deloitte group says, hey, that NIL deal is not for a legitimate business purpose, or that NIL deal compensates that athlete too much. In a capitalistic society, I think that's a little bit tough to regulate. And in so much as they try, would not surprise me when the folks who make their living on billable hours step to the forefront and say, we'll see you in court.
So obviously, Blake, you know, the NCAA, the folks in college athletics, they've darn near been begging Congress to help, right? I mean, you know, the judges don't like them. They're hoping somehow they can get some blanket protections. There's been constant talk about this. I know that there's something, again, there's a Republican-led committee right now, you know, with a bill that would do some of these things. Do you feel like that's feasible? How impactful could that be? Where are you on finally a life raft being provided by Congress?
Yeah, I would defer the highest level of expertise to our reporters at Cover the Hill. But my thought on it is, like, they've been asking for a federal bailout for 4 years now. None has come forward. We know, just generally speaking, the very narrow advantage for the Republicans in both the House and the Senate, which makes it hard to get something like this done without bipartisan support. And so then to get bipartisan support, I think you need to draw up a bill that that has some appeal to your friends in the other party. And I think that's a sticking point, right? A lot of the things that I think the Republicans would codify don't appeal to the left, and a lot of the things that I think the Democrats would codify around these issues don't appeal to the right. So can they get something that would engineer bipartisan support? I don't know, maybe they haven't in 4 years. It's, like I said, it's still a very, very slim advantage for one party in D.C. I think it would have a better chance of getting done if you had a more significant tipping of the scales toward one party or another in the chambers of Congress. But that's not the landscape right now. Maybe that changes in 2026 when we have midterm elections. I don't know. We heard Commissioner Brett Yormark from the Big 12 yesterday say, like, well, he feels like they're closer now to getting legislation in Congress than they were before. I mean, that might technically be true. I think the settlement providing some sort of framework that Congress can maybe work off of probably does inch you a little closer to the possibility of getting some federal legislation. Is it likely? I don't know. I keep thinking, like, the idea of getting bipartisan support around something, because that's what this would require, to me, still feels like a little bit of a long shot. Not a Hail Mary, but I guess more likely than not that it would be difficult, I think, to get something across the finish line from Congress.
So, Blake, donor fatigue with NIL. How much of a problem do you think it's been? How much of a concern do you think it has been moving forward? And how much, if at all, does this alleviate some of that with the House settlement?
I think donors will tell you they are fatigued. I think their bank accounts would tell you that their actions do not match their words. I mean, what you constantly run into is a donor saying, I really hate this system. I don't like it. This isn't the system that should be in place. Congress needs to step in. And they say all this while they have a check in their hand that they're walking over to the collective to hand off to go buy the next player. And so, yeah, I think donors would say they're fatigued. I don't know that we've seen that in practice. And in fact, I think we've seen the opposite of that in practice, right? And how much does this change that? Is a cop-out answer, but I think time will tell. I mean, my instinct is the way for teams to continue to separate themselves in the post-House settlement era is through NIL, right? I mean, we know the rev share element is going to be capped at the same cap for every team. You know, the figure is roughly around $20.5 million. Might be a couple ticks above that, but that's the general figure people are operating off right now. So that means it's a $20.5 million cap for Texas, same as it is for Tennessee, same as it is for Arizona State, right? And you're divvying that up across your sports. The general working figures are, this isn't required, but the schools you've heard talk about this say they're going to share about 75% of that $20.5 million with their football program. So let's just call that $15 million, right? Well, if everybody's sharing $15 million with their football program, no one's going to have a big advantage. And when I say everyone, I mean your Power Four schools, right? So how do you create an advantage? It's through NIL still. And so I don't think this shuts down in the NIL operation. I mean, NIL, I think, is going to move more in-house within the athletic department's control rather than being run by third-party collectives. So I think it's a shifting from out-of-house to in-house. There is supposed to be more oversight now with this Deloitte group that I was talking about earlier, this NIL clearinghouse run by Deloitte that's supposed to evaluate, you know, whether NIL deals are for a quote-unquote legitimate business purpose. Or if it's pay to play, again, I think that's going to be an incredibly difficult task for this clearinghouse to do. And yeah, my suspicion is that NIL is still going to remain a big part of college sports because that is going to be the way you separate yourselves. If everybody's sharing roughly the same amount in revenue share, I don't think that certain programs are out there, a lot of programs out there are just going to say, well, that's it. We're all sharing the same now. It's equal for everybody. No. It's in college sports, for as long as any of us can remember, everybody's been trying to get an advantage in any way they can. And the way you can gain an advantage here, I think, is still by having the strongest NIL program to supplement that revenue share cap. It's just the difference is, a lot of those NIL efforts, like I said, they used to be third-party deals before, run by groups outside the athletic department. Now, they're going to be moving more under the athletic department umbrella.
Even though, of course, as you know, Blake, even with the collectives, coaches would still be like, yeah, we're paying this guy this much, we're paying this guy that much. Like, oh, I thought it was the collective that was drawing up the salaries here. But, yeah, I mean, at least
– Yeah, third party.
Maybe we can FOIA this now. Can we FOIA this stuff now? That's my big concern. Like, can we get some you know, salary sheets out of this now? I hope so.
No, I think a lot of that information, sadly, will be shielded.
Yeah, it sucks. So, to your point, Blake, like, I wonder if you've had the same – I've talked to some people who I respect in college sports who, like, actually have been impressed by the – you know, the way this has all been explained, the CSC, the Deloitte aspect of it, and I actually think that because everyone's so worried about just the overall escalating costs, they actually think people are going to play ball. I'm with you. The first time that you are popped for something and you might lose one of your best players for two games or whatever it is, what are you going to – you're going to react the same way, right? But have you had that – like, have you – has anybody, like – talked you into or tried to talk you into or convince you in any way that maybe this is different?
I think the most common refrain that I hear is this isn't perfect, but it's better than what existed before, which was really nothing from the uniformity level, and everybody was just operating off their own state laws. Now we still have state laws, but there is something uniform that everybody says they're going to go along with. And so I think that is what I hear the most is a general acceptance that this is not perfect, that it is not going to solve all these issues that we're talking about, but it is a starting point, something that you can point to and say, we have this settlement, we can try to enforce it. Before, there really wasn't anything you could try to enforce, again, at least from the uniform level, from team to team, from state to state. There was nothing to really try to enforce, particularly after the state of Tennessee sued the NCAA and blew the doors open and it became true pay to play. There was after the NICO lawsuit, let's call it, where the NCAA started sniffing around the NICO deal. The attorney general and Tennessee took them to court and won a decision there. Then that was like whatever feeble attempt the NCAA could have otherwise made to enforce its rules. At that point, it was over. You couldn't do it. You couldn't enforce any rules. There were no rules the NCAA could enforce. Now this is something that, you know, that's the thing with this settlement is like when these schools try to act like, which they will, that these rules don't apply to you, well, you agreed to this settlement, right? You signed on to this deal. This wasn't, that's the thing people got to remember, this wasn't a judge coming down from on high, waving her magic wand and saying, this is the rule of the land now. This was a plaintiff suing the NCAA, which the NCAA is made up by its institutions, by its members, and the two parties, the plaintiffs and the NCAA, agreed to a settlement, which means the institutions agreed to this. Now, again, I still think, as we're talking about, when it's your school in the crosshair, you're going to be calling your lawyers and trying to figure out how you can get out of this. Even if the schools say that's not what they're going to do now, I mean, call me callous and jaded, but I believe that's what they're going to do.
I can't wait for the balls to be like, yes, punish us now.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sure that'll go well.
The only way they'll do that is if they want to fire a coach again. But
that's true.
But yeah,
Jeremy,
I mean,
Pruitt,
so the short answer to your question, Joe, is I think what I hear is this is something. This is more than existed before. I don't hear a lot of people believing, at least in the sober light of day, that this is a perfect solution and that this is sort of the final step, but it is a step.
Blake, I want to congratulate you as we kind of leave here. A couple weeks ago, it was a star-studded affair on the Paul Finebaum program. I mean, Lane Kiffin was there. Kirby Smart was there. Blake Topmeyer was there. Joe Rexroad was there. And Blake, as I'm watching this, had attire on appropriate of the beach. It was just a shirt. There was no ridiculous undershirt that he had on there. He looked like he was appropriate in his setting, Rexroad, with this big white T-shirt on under his polo. So, Blake, congratulations to you for having some style. We appreciate it.
You know, I live in the panhandle now, so this is just my day-to-day attire. That was just pulling stuff out of the closet.
Like Don Johnson out here.
So, yeah, it's not resort wear for me. That's just that's just my Friday night outfit there. So, yeah, that wasn't hard. I did see Joe walking around with that cotton T-shirt on underneath the polo.
Bold move.
Yeah, it was a bold move.
It's
a
sweat catcher, man. It's a sweat catcher. I'm wearing the exact same thing today.
And then a sweat catcher, true.
Yeah, I don't want my nipples to get raw.
Thank you.
I mean, what do you want me to, that's it, you know?
There it is. Maybe a dark blue could kind of work for you. That way you kind of get some visual protection there, but you could ditch the undershirt.
I guess that's fair. I'll work on it.
Blake, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Blake Tottmeyer from USA Today, our guest, will react to what he had to say there. Plus, some more news to get to in the NFL. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Appreciate Blake Tottmeyer for being with us in the last segment. Joe, we talked earlier about Trey Hendrickson and T.J. Watt not showing up to mandatory minicamp for both the Bengals and the Steelers, respectively. Well, you can add another one to the list. Diana Russini putting it out there that Terry McLaurin, the wide receiver for Washington, is frustrated with contract negotiations and will not be attending minicamp. So add Terry McLaurin to the list of players that will not be showing up for minicamp as he's looking for another contract. He is entering the final year of his deal.
This works out perfectly for the Titans Twitter trade proposal I saw, I think yesterday, which was like Treylon Burks and a pick for Terry McLaurin.
I think Washington would be all up on that. Who wouldn't want Treylon Burks in Washington?
Yeah. I mean, Cam Ward said on the video game he's one of the best in the league.
That's true.
Maybe Jaden Daniels heard that.
I mean, it is going to be interesting to see what the conclusion that they come to with Terry McLaurin, who was good last year, right? Like, he's 29 years old. I think he'll be 30 in September. So, again, he already got his first big deal, and now he's looking for the second one. So what's that going to look like with McLaurin? He had 82 catches last year, almost 1,100 yards, 4 yards short of 1,100, 13 touchdowns. So obviously a huge part of Jaden Daniels and his success in his rookie year. So, I mean, I would have to assume, Joe, that they're probably going to find a way to get a deal done at some point here, but not as of the moment. Apparently, the discussions and negotiations have frustrated Terry McLaurin to the point where he's not showing up to minicamp.
Yeah, if I'm Washington, I got to have Scary Terry.
I mean, the combination of him and Debo this year could be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially if Debo Samuel's healthy,
right,
which has been a problem lately. But if he's healthy,
exciting,
those two together could be pretty darn good.
Absolutely. So that's one that I think is posturing right now and take a little bit of fines, and that'll get worked out.
I would agree. The Hendrickson one, I don't know.
Hendrickson one, he may have to eat some humble pie.
Yeah, I mean, even T.J. Watt, right? Like, T.J. Watt is going to be 31 in October. Now, T.J. Watt, when he's been healthy, which, again, injuries have kind of been a problem for him at times too, but when he's been healthy, I mean, he's right there in the category to me with Myles Garrett. Like, it's kind of those two guys.
And it's with them, it's different from the Bengals, but it's the same in terms of, okay, so you signed up for this year of Aaron Rodgers, so, you know, you're going for it. You didn't pay a ton to Aaron Rodgers. Good for you. It's probably about the right number. But still, if you're going to do that, like, you need your best players.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of amazing when you look back at his career to this point, the production that T.J. Watt has had.
Insanely good.
Yeah. I mean, he started his second year in the league, he had 13 sacks. And he went on a run of 13, 14 and a half, 15, 22 and a half in a four-year span. Now, the 22 and a half was in 2021, so that was a long time ago. But he had 19 in 2023. He had 11 and a half last year. And I think he played in every game last year, but he had some stuff that he was playing through. So I don't know, maybe the days of him being a 15, 16, 17, 19 sack guy are behind him. I have no idea if they are or not. I still think if he's completely healthy, that guy can do some damage on a quarterback out there.
He's unblockable with one guy if he's 80% healthy. So that alone, what kind of difference does that make, you know, to your defense?
Yeah, you would think a gigantic, pretty significant one. But those are three guys that we have seen throughout the course of the show this morning that are not expected to show up the minicamp. Some conversation about Jeffrey Simmons. To me, there's no reason why Jeffrey Simmons wouldn't be there at minicamp. So I'm fully expecting him
at minicamp. Oh, yeah. We asked Justin Mello that earlier. I wasn't suggesting I thought he would not be there.
For sure,
I just figure, you know, it will be interesting to hear what he says, because I don't think it's a complete nothing burger that he, as we've talked about, that he didn't go to the voluntary stuff. I mean, this is if things are going well in your franchise and you got everything kind of set and you know the leadership structure and, you know, like, okay, run it back. Let's go. Let's make another run. That's one thing. That's not the situation with this team. And the situation with Jeffrey Simmons is a lot of skepticism about whether he's actually a leader. You don't aid that. You don't aid yourself in that by missing voluntary stuff.
I would agree. I mean, I guess really the interesting contract situation that they've got heading into this year, like Roger McCreary. Roger McCreary, I think you would agree, has been a good player for the Titans for the most part to this point. I'm interested to see what the dollar amount's going to be that he's going to get in his extension, what the Titans are willing to go to with him, and the year that he has this year, obviously. Like, I would agree, Justin Mello said, I don't know that Roger McCreary's got enough leverage to, like, sit out from minicamp to come show up and try to negotiate a new contract. Probably would not be the greatest idea from him. He's been good. I'm interested to see how they view him at the end of this year with a front office that did not draft him.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, because he's a young, good, pretty healthy, durable player.
Yes.
And
not perfect. He's got some flaws.
Yeah, but you've been out there trying to sign this veteran, trade for that veteran, things like that. You can't just constantly live on to me, it's like sign your own player, even if you didn't draft him, ideally here and there, as opposed to just constantly hoping you can keep drafting guys pick up guys off the street. So I think it should be a priority. But, yeah, I mean, it's not a big money deal.
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, friend of the show. We got him to sing on here a couple of times.
Maybe we can get him back.
Yeah.
Maybe we can do that again if he gets a new deal. What was he singing again? I mean,
I know he had the Baked Beans thing.
Yeah. He sang more than once on this show?
I believe he has sung twice on this program.
He has done
the act of singing on this program, I believe, two times, which is probably why he's not been back on.
Once we have Vrabel on, which I know it's going to happen soon, maybe we can get them together, do a little duet.
Vrabel?
A reunion.
NWI, Roger McCreary, coming up on the program at some point.
Florida Georgia Line.
That does it for us today. Chase and Big Joe up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.